Thanks so much for joining us. My name is Hoffman Wolf, and I'm the social economy manager at CNET. The province of Quebec is a world leader in the social economy. We're here to highlight some of the innovative things social economy enterprises are doing here, and to meet some of the really cool people involved in them. Today's theme is local media. No matter where you are, you probably have a local media outlet near you that's struggling. A lot of them are owned by out-of-town corporations. And you may have thought, is there anything we as community members can do to keep it alive? We're going to start off today with Hugh Maynard. Hugh lives in an agricultural area south of Montreal, and he's had a long career in journalism, as well as in starting and running collective enterprises. He led a team which took a 160-year-old local weekly newspaper in danger of folding and has kept it alive and thriving through an innovative, nonprofit, community-run structure. Here on the podcast with us today, we have Hugh Maynard, who is publisher of the Gleaner newspaper in the Montérégie West region. He's the executive director of the Châteauguay Valley Community Information Services, and he's the owner of Quanglo Communications and Consulting. Hugh, thanks so much for joining us today. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, nice to be here, Hoffman.
Before we get into the story of the Gleaner and of local media, I know you've worked in radio some, you've worked in journalism, I think agriculture journalism. Can you be just a little bit, what is your kind of journalism background?
Accidental at the beginning, working for the Quebec Farmers Association back in the mid-80s. They needed somebody to head up their monthly publication, the Quebec Farmers Advocate, which was a monthly newspaper for the English-speaking farmers across Quebec. I did that for the next 19 or so years. And parallel to that, I got picked up by the CBC as a freelancer, and they had a weekly program called The Farm Panel, which was with a couple of other farmers, one in the Eastern Townships, one in the Laurentians, and myself talking with the host about farm and food issues on a weekly basis. And it was actually more popular with the general public listening to the CBC than the farmers, because it was really their only contact with food and farm and directly with a couple of farmers that were right on site. So, and that extended over about 20 years. So I've got a fairly extensive background in community media and specifically related to agri-food.
And then, I don't know if you want to just start with kind of the story of the Gleaner and something's been around since the 1850s, a publication in the region, and how it came that you and the community there took it over and are now running it as a social enterprise.
Right. So typical of small communities that had their own newspaper, the Gleaner founded as the Huntingdon Gleaner back in 1863. So the area that we cover is about an hour southwest of Montreal, down close to the New York border, very rural, very agricultural. And a significant historic English population over the decades. And it pretty much ran that way as a family-owned enterprise associated with a local print shop, which again was very typical of small community newspapers, until the 80s rolled around and consolidation in media in general began. And it was bought by a regional chain and then resold to another chain, and then it was resold to another chain, and then it was sold to Quebecor, right, as the sort of big, large provincial one in the consolidation, and finally resold again to another regional chain that took it over, and within a short period of time folded the Gleaner as a standalone publication into their French language weekly giveaway as an insert. And that was sort of, I guess you could say, the beginning of the end, because it disappeared. It wasn't its own paper. The English population, which subscribed to the Gleaner, didn't have the sort of same access to the French language weekly giveaway. And then in 2018, the regional media chain decided that the Gleaner as an insert was not financially viable and they were going to close it. And at that point, to their credit, they reached out to the community via various channels, which ended up on my desk, and said, you know, we can't make a go of it. We're going to close it by the end of 2018. But it's a historic publication. If the community wants to try and do something, we'd be willing to collaborate. And so through a process of negotiations, We acquired the title to the Gleaner for a dollar, literally, you know, sort of the legal transaction.
Right.
Formed a nonprofit association after a series of steering committee meetings, and then ran a GoFundMe campaign that raised $25,000 that enabled us to print a series of monthly publications, which then allowed us to get people to subscribe, and the advertisers came back with a good level of support. And so we were able to then relaunch the Gleaner in January 2022, not as a weekly, but as a biweekly, like every 2 weeks. We are now coming up on the fifth anniversary of that relaunch back in June 2019. So yeah, time has really flown.
Yeah. You'd said that the regional chain reached out to you about the community purchasing the newspaper. Is that something that happens often when, you know, a newspaper is shutting down? Or why did they reach out to you in this case?
I think they feared the backlash because they had already had backlash from the community about closing the paper as a standalone and putting it in the French language paper. So I think they were a little bit concerned that this would be seen not in a great light. And so, but also I think there was a genuine desire. They didn't want to close it. It wasn't, you know, it just, it wasn't making the kind of money that they needed to make from the, which is a typical, more typical business model in Quebec is the French language news, community newspapers are giveaways, right? They go to everybody, they're right. In the Publi Sac, they're in the mailboxes, and they don't have a subscription list. They have only advertising. Whereas the Gleaner had been a subscription-based publication, which is more typical of English language community newspapers in Quebec. So it was a different model altogether. It didn't work within their business structure. And so that was, I think they were really genuinely pleased when we took it over, so that it was, we were able to continue. When we did the official relaunch, the owners of the media chain came and participated, and we framed the dollar and we put it in a little certificate and we gave it to them. So we've been on good terms with them ever since.
And for the, you talked about this framed dollar that you bought it with. What was there to buy exactly? Was there a newsroom? Was there a printing press? What exactly were you getting when you paid a dollar for the Gleaner?
Intellectual property.
Okay.
So it was the title, and they transferred the registration of the title from their business registry over to ours. That's all we got. Everything else had to be created from scratch. 20 years ago, you wouldn't have been able to do this because you would have also had to raise the money for a building and equipment. Whereas today, we're in the digital era. Everybody already had a laptop. Everybody had an internet connection. And we were literally in business in 5 minutes because we had a couple of previous employees, a couple of reporters who had worked on the newspaper. We had myself, who had some background and experience in publishing. We had a local person who ran a little website company, and they donated a website format, you know, platform to us.
Okay.
So there were a number of circumstances that were fortunate that allowed us to get up and running very quickly and at very minimal cost.
Figuring out a viable business model for media outlets has been a struggle for quarter century now, since the dawn of the internet. For the Gleaner, what's your business model? I know you get some provincial and federal government funding, but subscriptions, ads, how do you, what's the model there?
So at the beginning, when we formed a steering committee, which then led to the nonprofit, we talked about all the different options that could be followed. Could be we could sell the Gleaner to an owner who would invest in it. We could form the nonprofit, which we did, and run it as a social enterprise. Social enterprise being a nonprofit that has at least 40% of its revenues coming from goods and services rather than government grants. We could have formed a cooperative, right? So that everybody who wanted to have the Gleaner became a member of the cooperative. That was a lot more complicated, and there are a lot more regulations around financial aspects that would have, we wouldn't have got it off the ground quite so quickly. So we quickly fell on the model of a nonprofit social enterprise, so owned by the community, Any profit, any surplus that we make would be reinvested in the paper. In order to generate money, because we're English minority in a rural area, the critical mass is really our biggest challenge, right? If we were in the West Island of Montreal, where there are more English speakers, it would have been a different dynamic. But we recognize that. And so we had to generate some money at the beginning. And the quickest way to do that was to sell subscriptions, which we did. People were very happy to see the Gleaner come back. We had no problem getting people to sign up at $60 a piece. And then the advertising followed. But we also knew that running the Gleaner just as a newspaper was going to be more than a challenge. It wasn't going to be viable over the long term. And hence the name of the official name of the ownership. So the Gleaner is the title of the paper. The owner, as in the company, but in this case the nonprofit, is the Chateauguay Valley, which is the name of the region, Community Information Services. So our mandate is to provide information to the community. We are doing it primarily now through the pages of the Gleaner. But if the most effective way to inform the community was to get a very loud-voiced teenager on a soapbox on the corner of the IGA on Saturday morning with a bell yelling out the news, that's what we would do because it fulfills our mandate. Obviously, we're not going to do that, but just to give you the sort of the contrast. So we've got the paper up and running. And so we've been delving into a number of different projects, as we call them, trying to look at other ways to fulfill our mandate, but at the same time generate revenues which support the overall operations and ensure the viability. So with the small market that we're in, we started off with part-time employees. That's a challenge because how are you going to keep part-time employees over the long term? You want to offer them long-term positions with reasonable pay and hours. So we need to generate other kinds of revenue. So we've undertaken different kinds of projects, including podcasting, to sort of poke the bear and see what works, what doesn't work, what will generate some revenues. We could easily start a community radio station. It would be within our mandate. We're not going to do that because the equipment costs and the regulation that go with a radio station are well beyond our means. But that's the kind of thing that we're looking at. And the one project that's just coming to a close that we're going to be launching soon is called Quebec Connect, which is a news service. We've used AI to create a script that crawls the web and picks off news and summarizes it of news and information related to the regions. And the purpose of that is not to compete with newspapers that are in existence or in Montreal, but in places like Thetford Mines, in Sept Îles, the Magdalen Islands, Bitibi-Témiscamingue, where the English-speaking population is very small and the critical mass will not support their own community newspaper. So this will be a website that will provide news about these regions in English that they can access. And so although they won't have their own community newspaper, at least they'll have access to more news and information that's pertinent to an English-speaking person who lives in the regions.
So in that context, it takes the local French language weekly or the local French language and translate the content, or where is the news coming from in an area that doesn't have an English paper?
Yes, so a lot of French language sources, but also announcements of new programs, for example, and the federal government program for seniors for dentist subsidy, right?
Oh, right.
So that's a news item that if you hadn't been reading the French paper, you wouldn't know much about. So it gathers that information. Of course, that's already in English because it's the federal government. But, you know, if there's a change in the pension plans with Quebec guidelines for lobster fishermen or, whatever the news is that's pertinent to the area, it'll pick it up. It'll summarize it, translate it, and post it on the website. So at least you get a flavor of the news that you're not going to get, with all due respect, from the Montreal Gazette or the CBC, because they're Montreal-based, they're Montreal-centric, and they have limited resources to cover out in the regions.
Looking at the Gleaner, we get the print copy here at our RDN offices. It's impressively robust, I'd say. In 2024, How are you able to sell newspaper ads when in most other print newspapers, it's almost non-existent?
It's tough. It is.
No, I'm just always impressed by the sheer number of advertisers you have in there.
That is a demonstration of community support.
Right.
And I think that's where the benefit of being a community-owned entity is, because even the as much as the subscribers recognize that, the businesses that support us also recognize that, that they're supporting a community institution, and when they contribute to it, they're not giving money over to somebody else's pocket, and not to be critical of the private business, but, you know, they know that they're contributing to a community institution. But the other part of that is that as a nonprofit, we are eligible for a number of different government programs that support community media. And so that definitely helps contribute to the operations, and without them, the paper would be a lot smaller and a lot thinner than what it is now. So there's the local journalism initiative from Canadian Heritage. There is the Ministère de Communication et Culture. They have a program that supports community media. And there are various other aid to publishers programs and things like that. And although we don't want to be overly dependent on government support, because, you know, it changes over the years, the fact is that given our minority language status in a minority context, a rural area, right? So we're in a minority within a minority within a minority. In order to keep the institution going, we're going to, you know, bang on all the doors. And quite frankly, the government gives a massive contribution to CBC as a public broadcaster. So there is a model for government contributions. Quebec government makes a contribution to Télé-Québec. So, you know, there is a rationale for support for smaller publications. And the other thing, quite frankly, is the government has completely messed up the whole, I don't know whether you call it regulation, but certainly the relationship with the Googles and the Metas of the world, which have inflicted enormous damage on small community media, because they work on a model that's millions and tens of millions of viewers and hits and so on and so forth, and really have, you know, monopolized what advertising and other kinds of commercial revenues that are out there. And the government, I feel, has been complicit in that. So I have no compunction about knocking on the door to provide support. Provided, of course, and I agree, that it goes towards the editorial function, right? Producing local quality news and not going into, you know, the pockets of private business as it does with some of the larger publications.
It seems like there is government funding out there. There's different pockets here and there, but it's quite piecemeal or catch-as-catch-can. Ideal world, would there be a way to make it easier for government to fund media, or what would a structure where that can be done in a bit more streamlined way look like?
There's always two sides to the fence on these things. On the good side of the fence is, I think it dates back to 2017, the federal government made a special provision for charitable status for eligible community media. And this then allows us to solicit donations and give out tax receipts, which, as you know, for when you give donations, if you can give out tax receipts, it's a much more attractive proposition. So that has, we just got that approved last year and have been starting to collect donations, and it's slowly ramping up. It's the same model with La Presse and Le Devoir, which are larger publications, but they are nonprofit, and so they're eligible for this provision. And so over time, I'm hoping both the donations on a sort of immediate basis, and also we're working with our local a development corporation to look at planned giving, so that people who want to leave a legacy in their will or a contribution through their life insurance can donate to the Gleaner or get a tax receipt and build up the long-term finances of the publication. So that's it. To me, that's an extremely important measure for the non-profit sector that will help considerably. On the other side, the federal government has made a decision not to advertise in newspapers anymore, no matter how big or how small or where they are or for what purpose. That was across the board. They were only going to spend money on their own websites and through social media, Google and Meta and others. And we've been extremely critical of that decision because they've essentially excluded out of those advertising programs small, particularly community newspapers like ourselves. And in terms of a revenue source, there's nothing better than a full-page color ad from the government in terms of the most amount of money for the least amount of work that has to be done to put it forward.
And here in Quebec, we've seen that the provincial government does do that quite a bit, English and French, yeah.
Provincial government saved our bacon during COVID with the blue pages, as we called them, and it was very much appreciated, and they got a lot of goodwill and benefit out of that. But this is the thing, is that so we're subscribing to a number of programs. There's a lot of administration, there's a lot of reporting, there's a lot of detail. I'm just not convinced that we appreciate it because we need it, but there's better ways to do it. And the way to do that would be for the federal government to go back to, I don't know whether it includes Maclean's or the National Post, but certainly to your local weekly newspapers, if you were to put those ads in, it would be the easiest and simplest and most beneficial way to support those publications. And at the same time, is a win-win situation because the federal government gets all kinds of publicity and promotion in the general population.
Right.
So I never understood the basis for that decision because the total number of dollars is in the grand scheme of billion-dollar deficits is pretty minimal. And the benefits to the community media sector and to the government, I think, are substantial. And yet they will not move off that position despite a considerable amount of lobbying. So that's, that's a sort of a business case, if you will, but and it applies to both social enterprises like the Gleaner as well as, privately owned papers. But to me, that would be, if the government would change the model and go back to that advertising, it would make a huge, huge difference.
I know the philanthropic sector plays a somewhat substantial role in media in the States. How big is the philanthropic sector in Canada when it comes to media?
It is and isn't. In the United States, it always amazed me, there seems to be a foundation on every corner of every small town. Their tax structure is very different. It's much easier to set up a foundation, put money in, get some tax relief, and that's what they do. And as a consequence, the 45% on average of revenues for nonprofit newspapers in the United States comes from foundations. So it's basically a substitution. We get taxed, goes to the government. The government decides that they're going to hand it back out, which is the model that we have. In the United States, they don't get taxed, but they put it into the foundations for tax relief, and then they decide who to give it out. Same thing. The non-profit community media sector is dependent on a significant level of subsidy, either from foundations or from a government at this particular stage. Which model is better? It's hard to say. If you're good at filling out grants, which we have been relatively successful, you go for the government model. If you're good at soliciting foundations, or you've got a foundation that's sympathetic towards community media, then that's the way to go. But in effect, it's the same result. The long-term model for the Gleaner to be viable would be a rough division of revenues of 40% advertising, 20% subscriptions, 20% donations, and 20% government support. That, to me, would be an ideal goal to aim towards. Over time that would ensure the viability and the ability to put out a quality product.
So we've seen that various types of social economy enterprise, the model, be instituted in media outlets, whether it's the way you guys are doing it with the Gleaner. There's the news co-ops of the other papers in the province, Le Soleil, the Sherbrooke paper, the Chicoutimi paper. La Presse is a nonprofit. What conditions need to be in place to either turn a newspaper into a social enterprise or to even create a social enterprise media outlet?
Yeah, I think there has to be the first and foremost is the social mandate, right? The community mandate, that it responds to a need in the community. I mean, a business could do that as well. Private business could do that as well, but that has to be there first and foremost. And I remember very clearly when we had the relaunch event in June 2019, 200 people showed up to that event with checks in hand and sort of waving them and here, you know, give me my cleaner, I want it now. So the community support was tremendous right off the bat. And again, I don't think that would have been the case if it had been a private enterprise. The second part is that if there's financial certainty or as much certainty as you could expect from a business venture, then businesses would be already involved, right? But the fact is that the media business is not a good area to invest in right now for a number of reasons. That doesn't mean it can't be viable, but businesses are not rushing in there to start community newspapers, right? Not like they did 100 years ago.
Right.
So if we consider it to be an important element of community life, which I believe it is, and a lot of people think the same way, then if the business case is not there, then you have to look at the alternate, and that is through the social enterprise that's owned by the community. The history of the Gleaner over the last 30-odd years is being sold from one media chain to another because of the lack of viability. And that meant that every time it was sold, the number of pages was cut down, the number of staff were let go, and things like that. So our number one commitment is that we're going to put out good local quality news. And if we can't do that, we're not fulfilling our mandate. And we're not going to be distracted by whatever else, investment schemes or, you know, tax deductions and all the other stuff that goes on at the business level. So I think whether it's for community newspapers or whether for its ensuring that there's a local store to supply the community, whether it's because to provide a service like a Frippery or Meals on Wheels, or it doesn't matter. It's something that's fulfilling the community's needs, but doing it in a way that's financially viable. So it's socially responsible and financially viable. And I think that's the key to the model right there. Whereas the private business is always going to, as much as they may be socially committed, they're always going to end up looking at the bottom line first and foremost. And social enterprise still has to exist and stay in business, has to generate a surplus. But it's really what you do with that surplus in terms of if you've managed it well and investing it back into the community, which is what we do.
Have other small media or media outlets of any size been interested in replicating your model? Or what's keeping more small media outlets from doing what you've done?
I think generally speaking is a lack of awareness of the capacity of the social enterprise model. Or how to operate it, right? Because it's not just a nonprofit; you still have to operate it as a business. So I just don't think it's on the radar screen in terms of what should we do, how should we run this? If we can't do it this way, should we do it that way? And I think in our case, it's related to experience in other models. And I'll give the example of our local agricultural fair. It was offered the services by a consultant to convert them into a social enterprise. And when they asked me about it, I said, you don't need to. You already are a social enterprise because the majority of your revenue comes from selling tickets at the gate, which is a goods and services. It doesn't come from government grants. So you are a social enterprise already. So again, that sort of a view of nonprofits being different from social enterprises. And also just the whole aspect of the co-op structure being somewhat more complex. I think that people don't view it as a viable alternative. But on the other side is we got the Gleaner back up and running. And so several other communities in the region, in the Montérégie region, west, center, and east, said, well, if you can do it, why can't we? We don't have a paper. You know, there's not a history of a paper, so it may be more of a challenge. But yes, definitely there would be, I think, opportunities in doing a feasibility or market study, look at points of collaboration, economies of scale, sharing expertise, you know, all those sort of good things that you get. And you also then have more of critical mass, which benefits the gleaner in a small rural market, right, to be associated with other publications or affiliated publications in a larger suburban or urban setting. So I think people, particularly in this business, because it's well suited to the digital world, right? It's the Gleaner does not have an office, a physical mortar and bricks office. We don't need it. Everybody works from home with a computer and laptop, and as long as you've got a decent internet connection, you're in business. And then the staff gets together on an occasional basis for meetings. The rest of it is all done online. You can't do that with some businesses, right? They need a physical entity. But in this case, we don't need a physical entity. We can do it all online. So there's absolutely no reason why, if one was to think big, right, that there would be a consortium of English language, small community, regional publications all working together.
So if a community sees that its newspaper is potentially going under, in danger of going under, what steps should they take if they want to keep that media outlet going? Or if they want to have at least some sort of, if they say the paper's gone, but we want to continue to have some sort of local media outlet that serves the same purpose.
They can, at a minimum, take information from other sources, but you still need some, you know, coordination. You still need some expertise. You need some editorial resources. You need some digital component. And you still need to generate some revenue to do that, no matter how small it may be. So, but, you know, that's a possibility working through a regional organization or a community organization. But I think to have a community media, as we would understand a community newspaper, right, but with a digital platform, with a web and, well, we can't use Facebook because we're banned by Meta, but,
yeah.
You know, along those kinds of lines, certainly bringing people together and engaging with, you know, the Gleaner would be happy to come and talk and say, you know, this is what we did, this is how we did it, and see whether there is the possibility to emulate that, because our experience was the community responded and gave us the financial resources. So think about what the Gleaner did in 2019. We raised approximately $125,000 in the space of a couple of months to enable the paper to then get back into production.
Right.
If you were a private business, you'd borrow it, right? Or investors would put the money in, right, as shares in order to generate that money. But because it was community-owned, the community stepped up. They paid their subscription not knowing that they were going to get a paper in 6 months, right? But they had faith that we were going to do that. And so they made that investment. So that's the first step. Is the community involved in the publication? Because if it is, then you know there's a demand and you know that there's support, and that will carry you a long way. And so that takes a bit of rassemblement, right? Mobilization and so on and so forth. The second part then is some expertise, both in relation to setting up a nonprofit that operates as a social enterprise, and of course CNET is, you know, is a network, as there are other organizations in Quebec that provide those kinds of background services if you don't have the expertise to do that. And then the third part, of course, is you need to have somebody who knows how to run a newspaper.
Right.
At least some editorial skill, you know, those kinds of things. And that probably is the biggest challenge. The other two, we know the communities want these types of enterprises, these types of services and programs. We know the support mechanisms are there, they're in place. So then you get down to the particular skill of, you know, who does the reporting, who does the editing, who does the production of, you know, so it comes out in a form that you go, oh, yeah, this looks like a newspaper, right? Rather than a bunch of kids, you know, with a desktop publishing software on a weekend.
The Gleaner has no full-time employees still at the moment?
No, the Gleaner has three full-time employees, And we managed to pull that off by, you know, the revenues for the newspaper, as well as some of the government grants.
Okay.
Mostly the ones that are, for example, the Local Journalism Initiative, that is specifically there to support a reporter. That enables us to meet the minimum requirements for what they call the Qualified Canadian Journalism Organization. And that status allows you access to all the different programs, and you need a minimum of 2 full-time journalists working on the publication. All the others are either part-time or volunteer in terms of the various different things, from the office to ad sales to the website and so on and so forth. And of course, as a nonprofit, we have a board of directors of volunteers from the community who, you know, help to do the governance and the long-term vision.
In theory, the barrier to entry to creating a media outlet is low. I mean, in theory, you could just have a website and report. But I've been wondering, what was the sort of bar for whatever the funders are to consider you an actual newspaper that is fundable?
They're actually pretty strict. So anybody can, you know, start writing a blog. Anybody can do a podcast and call themselves a radio station. Right.
Yeah.
But we underwent a fairly arduous process. They examined every copy for a year and went through it article by article and made notes on every one of them. And then in addition to having the journalistic staffing requirements, it's not just for anybody that happens to be publishing a newsletter. It has to meet a minimum set of criteria, which is fairly strict. And
you're rightfully so, yeah.
You can argue it could be less so. Community radio stations find it difficult to have 2 full-time journalists. They don't generate enough revenue, and they've asked, could that threshold be lowered? But the fact is, they're on the air 24/7. They're regulated by the CRTC, and they're providing regular news bulletins. To me, they're a community institution involved in the provision of news. They should be eligible. So, but there is there are a number of news outlets, as they say, that are basically run by 1 or 2 individuals, and I'm not critical of them at all. They do good reporting, and they do reflect issues, but they are individuals, right, rather than organizations. And so they may generate money from subscriptions, they may have some advertising, but you've got to put all those things together. I think there's still a standard that needs to be met.
There are some ways for outlets to move forward, but it's challenging, and you have to have buy-in, you have to have structure, you have to have people who know how to run a newspaper. What do you see as kind of the future for, whether it's for the Gleaner and your other local initiatives, or for local newspapers, local media outlets in general, given the extremely challenging times we live in for local media?
So I think long-term collaboration is going to be the key. So the Gleaner has thrived on, you know, the initial relaunch, the community support, but you know, over time the different sources of revenue and the right now economic times are tough. It's a real challenge getting advertising coming in. So collaborating with others for scales of efficiency, for management, for all those other kinds of things that would help to make it more viable, as well as the distribution of expertise, right? So if the folks in Thetford Mines, with only a few hundred English-speaking individuals, said, yeah, we'd really like to have a print publication because that's what majority of our population are seniors, and they prefer that over, you know, something on the web. You could do that, but they couldn't do it alone. They would have to do it, I hate to use the word satellite, but, you know, it would have to be in conjunction with a Gleaner or another publication, all connected to together, so that many of those things that at one time were entirely standalone, your own editor, your own reporter, your own printer, all those kinds of things, you may not be able to afford them. The key to that is, though, how do you ensure that you still have quality local content? Because we know, as an English-speaking community, in Quebec, we can get English news from anywhere in the world, right?
Right.
Instantaneously. CNN, The Guardian, New York Times. But it's not pertinent to us. It's not about us. It's not about our communities. It's not about events that happened at the local school. It's not about who was born and who's passed away. So the whatever the structure is, whatever the linkage and collaboration is, it has to ensure that local content is predominant and not simply syndication, right? Repetition of words that were written in Toronto and then stuffed into... My famous example is that I was taking a taxi to the airport in Montreal and listening to Shom FM, and the DJ told a joke. And so then I got on the plane, I flew to Toronto, and I was taking a taxi downtown, and the DJ on the equivalent of Shom FM in Toronto told the same joke. So
were they all just given a script at the beginning of the day, or?
They have this dashboard and they just pull the stuff off. And that's how they all operate, is that you have an individual with a different voice to say it's local.
Right.
But the content is all centralized and syndicated. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter. It was a joke, but it was sort of revealing behind the scenes, you know, and so this is the challenge. CBC does superb work with their national programs and even with some of their regional ones, but the emphasis is not on regional. So they don't have a reporter in the Gaspé. They don't have a reporter in Sept Îles. So it's only when there's a fire or a flood or a plane crash that you actually get some coverage. Radio-Canada, on the other hand, because their mandate is to serve the French-speaking community, they have reporters in all those locations. So there is news available, but it's in French, and it's not available on the English language CBC. So, and I'm not being overly critical, it's just that's the way the structure has evolved. So if there was a consortium of English language community media, the key to that is to ensure that there's boots on the ground in Sept Îles or Baie-Comeau or wherever it is, who can contribute local content, so that yes, there's an article on changes to pensions for seniors at a provincial level, but there's also something about their community in terms of their events, their schools, their people, and if that's not there, then they'll no longer be a local publication.
Right, because I was going to ask that, because looking at the Gleaner, most of the stories are extremely local. So the number of, what we call it, shareable stories that would be of interest to somebody in Thetford Mines or Sept Îles or Chicoutimi or wherever are limited. But I guess in theory, with a network of papers, you could figure out content. You'd have to figure out some more content that's relevant to everyone.
Well, I mean, you can share stories. I mean, it's always interesting to read about somebody who started up a new business or a kid who's got a new project at school. It's not that those aren't interesting.
Right.
But if your publication is full of those kinds of stories of people you don't know and are from other locations, then it has limited value.
Right.
Whereas if you, obviously some kind of a balance, but the predominance has to be that what happened in your community, what happened in Thetford Mines in the last week or 2 weeks, who got married, who had a baby, who came to visit, what kind of bluegrass festival went on, you know, all the, you know, the keys to the local news, what happened at the municipal council, and those kinds of things. That's what needs to be covered on a local basis, and then complemented by other kinds of news and information, but you have to emphasize the local first and foremost. Otherwise, you will lose your local readership or audience.
You've been around the media world for quite a while. Maybe not much surprises you anymore, but since the Gleaner started, what surprised you about what the paper means to the community, or just what it's able to do?
I shouldn't say nothing, but because we always knew what a community newspaper could be. We always knew what the community wanted. The constraints to that were previous owners that ran it on a commercial basis. So if they only had enough advertising for 12 pages, right, in terms of whatever formula they used, that's all you got was 12 pages, even if you had news for 24. So Whereas we do have to be conscious of the balance between cost and revenues. If we are cutting our newspaper back continually from 24 to 12 pages, we're not fulfilling our mandate because we're leaving a lot of news and information, you know, to the side, you know, not putting it up there. So I think most people feel if you walked around the community and asked them, they say, yep, this is what we've always wanted, and this is what we missed when it closed, and this is what we missed even before it closed because it was being reduced on a sort of ongoing basis. So we know what the formula is, we know what the community wants, and so the real question is, you know, just fitting all the pieces together to make it happen, and then of course sustain it over time. The sort of unanswered question is that are there other things beyond, going back to the beginning of our discussion, beyond the newspaper, that will allow us to fulfill our mandate in a different format and generate some revenue? So as an example, we're doing now, we've dipped our toe in the world of podcasting. Very good reception, good listenership.
Yep.
But it takes extra resources, right, that aren't being paid for by the subscribers, aren't being paid for by the advertisers or by the government money. So how do we sustain the sort of the pilot initiative that we put forward? We know we can do it. We know we've got the staff to do it. We've got a couple of actors, you know, amateurs that, you know, have pretty good voices. So, you know we can do it. We have the technical expertise, but it costs money to do that. So one of the things that we're toying with is that we're predominantly an agricultural region. So having a podcast or a show, a streaming show on agriculture would respond to our audience, right? We're in a rural area with a lot of farmers. We could do, quite a bit of coverage. We also know from past experience that the urban audience has a lot of interest in farming and food because they live in an urban setting, but they like to know where their food comes from.
Right.
I think there's a significant external audience that would listen to that material, and therefore is the potential to generate revenue that would then support the rest of the enterprise. Ask me in a year or two whether that's the case, but you see, it's looking at those opportunities that are in line or aligned with your principal mandate, but then also may be able to generate, in our case, the revenues that enable us to go beyond the critical mass that we're constrained with at the moment.
Tell us, where can you find the Gleaner?
Where can you find the Gleaner? Well, you can find it online, the-gleaner.com. If you end up in the Gleaner in Jamaica, don't be despondent. Yeah,
I googled that. There's another Gleaner. Were you guys the first one? Or?
Yeah, and there's also a Gleaner in Fredericton, New Brunswick.
Okay.
And when Facebook made a mistake, they put our telephone number into the New Brunswick Gleaner. And we started getting all these people calling us, complaining about how they hadn't received their copy. We had to point out that you got the wrong Gleaner here. So, the web gives us, you know, a lot of access. There are our core constituency still wants to have a print copy on the table, right, to browse through. Advertisers, local advertisers, find more value in the print copy than online.
Okay.
Which is not the case for Google. So it's Facebook, it's, you know, Amazon, it's a completely different model, but it's not generating government saying, go digital. It's not working for small community newspapers. The volume of hits isn't there to sustain it. I think the biggest challenge is that as the generations pass on, the generation that's coming up has grown up on a diet of free information. And finding ways to get them to accept that there's value in this information and that you need to make a contribution towards the cost of producing it, that is certainly the biggest challenge. Because we will lose paying subscribers over the next decade because the average age of our reader is 55 to 65 kind of demographics. And so how do you get those 30-somethings, those 20-somethings who are looking at TikTok and other kinds of mediums for nothing, for their data and for their eyeballs on the advertising. I think as a social enterprise and the ability to, with charitable status, we have an advantage because we are, people will donate to a cause as much as they will subscribe. And so we have an extra tool in our toolkit to substitute, I think, as long as we promote it. But I think that's just one example, is that we need to think of ourselves always as an information provider, and then what's the most effective and efficient way to deliver that information to the audience that we've got. It may be a newspaper. It will be a newspaper for still many years to come. But what are the alternate or additional ways, complementary ways, that we can fulfill that mandate? And I think any community media has to take that view, because if they just look at themselves as a newspaper publisher, they're not going to make it past the next 10 years.
It's great to see that the Gleaner has figured out a workable model, at least, that seems to be going well now. And hopefully there's some other workable social economy models, whether it's cooperatives, whether it's nonprofits like Black Price, and there's all sorts of different ways to look into it. So hopefully other media outlets, especially smaller ones, may see what the Gleaner's been up to and may see that it's something they want to explore more. Hugh Maynard, publisher of The Gleaner, executive director of Shadowgate Valley Community Information Services, and owner of Coinglow Communications and Consulting. Thank you so much for joining us, and it was great to chat. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. And it's everybody wants some more information, they can certainly get a hold of us at The Gleaner.
Thanks so much for listening, and thanks so much to Hugh for joining us. He's a wealth of information, and if you know of a local media outlet that's struggling, you can reach out to either us or Hugh. We hope you enjoyed our conversation today. Again, if you have any questions or there's any guests you'd like to see, or even if you have your own social enterprise and would like to join us on the show, reach out to us at info@cnet.ca, S-E-E-N-E-T, or contact us through our website at cnet.ca. We'll see you next time. This podcast project has been made possible with the financial support of the Secretariat aux Relations avec les Québécois d'Expression Anglaise.